Chapter 23. The sheer number of Event Horizon facilities springing up in Peterborough after the Second Restoration, coupled with Willem's proximity, meant that the company had to establish a large finance division in the city. Julia used it as her de facto head office, so it was only natural that Morgan Warshaw should use it for his security division's command centre as well. It was a temporary arrangement, while both divisions waited for their respective custom-built headquarters to be completed. The building they had moved into for the interregnum was the old Thomas Cook office block, situated at the top of a small bluff overlooking the Ferry Meadows estuary, on the western side of the town. In doing so, they'd ousted the PSP Minorities Enhancement Council staff, who had occupied it ever since currency restrictions put an end to the glories of package holidays. After Event Horizon had taken over, the company engineers immediately set about building a concrete embankment along the bluff to halt the erosion which was eating towards the foundations. At the base of it, they planted three small lagoons of jean-tailored coral to house a set of tidal turbines which powered the finance division's gear. Seeing a building which wasn't plastered with the glossy black squares of solar cells came as something of a novelty. The security office inside, which Greg and Gabriel had been loaned for interviewing the NN core team, was a cramped cell of a room with a metal table and three plastic chairs. It looked out towards Longthorpe, where gulls strutted about on the partially exposed mudflats. Emily Chapman left the office without looking round, her rigid back conveying stark disapproval. She had every right to be upset, Greg acknowledged. He was actually doing the interviews with the NN core team. He thought it politic. Gabriel had dropped into one of her best prickly sulks at having to examine his possible interviews with over 250 of the security staff in the building, and told him to take a share of the load himself for a change. But she could have timed it better, though. The trouble was, Philip Evans had been right. The NN core team were all grade-A people. Keen, loyal, honest, hard-working, churned out by Event Horizon's blandification program. They hadn't taken kindly to his accusations.
Shit creek and no messing.
He could feel a neurohormone headache coming on. Thank God there had only been 9 of them to question.
Don't swear, Gabriel snapped primly.
I've got a right. None of them leaked the information about the NN core. How are you doing with the security personnel?
You wouldn't find anything.
What? None of them have any shameful secrets.
They might well have, but if so, they can certainly hide it from you.
His unwinding esper sense caught her jellied mind tone. Eggshell walking time.
Bugger. You know what that means.
Dylan Evans.
Yeah. Unless we can produce this mole pronto. And I'm now having serious doubts he ever existed. Christ, how am I going to tell Philip? Maybe I'll tell Julia first. She's pretty protective when it comes to her father. Can't say I blame Dylan, though. The man is totally fucked. Not rational.
Saved by the bell.
What?
His cyberfax bleeped.
Oh.
The call was a data squirt, a scramble code he knew by heart. Royan. His spirits lifted as the decrypted message rolled down the cyberfax's little screen. Royan had found one of the hot rods involved in the Blitz. Aid O'Donnell. Operating from Leicester under the handle 10 times. Greg snapped the cyberfax shut with a flourish. At last he could take some positive action, get out of dead company architecture and pull in hard information. When he glanced up, Gabriel was already standing by the door, expectant.
Coming?
She asked. Greg drove past the ranks of company buses in the car park and out onto the A47. Getting underway didn't noticeably alter Gabriel's disposition.
Fascinating, she said. The lovely Eleanor, a fully-fledged Trinity urban predator. The mind boggles.
I wish you'd make an effort. That girl's never said a single bad word about you, and God knows she's entitled.
Greg, you can't just abandon all your old mates in her favour, however besotted you are with her gymnastic legs and top-heavy chest.
He pulled his anger down to a tight incendiary ball. Anger never did any good, not against Gabriel. But it was fucking tempting to let fly once in a while. Not this time, though. He needed her, and she knew it.
Eleanor gets on perfectly well with the marine adepts, and Royan has taken a shine to her.
That was the first time you'd been to see Royan for 2 months. You know how much that boy worships you.
Fell into that one, he told himself.
Just as she'd intended, guiding his conversation down the tow line she'd selected. Greg gunned the duo along the A-47 above the flooded remains of Aylesworth. Her words had kindled not so much guilt as a sense of melancholy. Arguing with her when she was being this waspish was impossible. Whatever he said in his defence, she'd have a parry honed and ready, the best of all possible answers. Besides, truthfully, he had neglected Royan. Eleanor made it easy to forget, life and the future, rather than Royan, a shackle to an emetic past. He just wished Gabriel didn't use a sledgehammer to ram home the point. He was aware of her studying his face intently. She gave a tart nod and leant back into the seat cushioning. The last section of road leading into Leicester cut through a banana plantation. Methane-fueled tractors chug between the rows of big, glossy-leafed plants, hauling vast quantities of still-green fruit in their cage trailers. Cutter teams moved ahead of the tractors, machetes flashing in the sun. Incorporated in the city boundary sign was the prominent declaration, PSP-free zone.
"Oh, yeah," said Gabriel.
Greg let the snipe ride, though he conceded she had a point. Leicester Council had earned a reputation for sycophancy during Armstrong's presidency. It was one of the last to acknowledge the party's perdition. That obedience was the root of its downfall. A numbing historical repetition, those showing the most loyalty receiving the least. With such devotion assured, the PSP had no need to pump in bribe money. Leicester had declined as Peterborough had risen. Now the city's new conservative-dominated council was striving hard to obliterate the image of the past in an attempt to attract hard industry investment.
"Give them a chance," Greg said. "It's only been 2 years."
"Once a trot, always a trot."
"Exactly where would you be happy living?"
he asked in exasperation.
"Mars, I expect. Turn left here."
"I know."
He turned off the Uppingham Road and nudged into the near solid file of bicycle traffic along Spencefield Lane. The big old trees, whose branches had once turned the road into a leafy tunnel, were long dead. New sequoias had been planted to replace them. They were grand trees, but Greg couldn't help wondering whether they were a wise choice if the residents were aiming for permanency. Give them a couple of centuries and the sequoias would be skyscraper high. The original trees had been trimmed into near-identical pillars 6 meters high, supporting giant crossbeams over the road. Each arch was swathed in a different coloured climbing rose. The sun shone through the petals, creating a blazing sequence of coronal crescents. It was like driving under a solid rainbow. Greg slowed the duo to a walking pace as they passed the entrance to an old school. Cars were clustered along the verge ahead, sporty Renaults, several Mercs, one old Toyota GX4. Image cars.
"Shouldn't there be sailboards strapped on top of them?" Gabriel said under her breath.
Greg concentrated on house numbers, praying she'd snap out of it before long. Of course, he could always ask her when her mood was due to end. He clamped down on a grin.
"That's the address."
The house was hidden behind a head-high brick wall that had a hurricane fence on top. A thick row of evergreen firs hid most of the building from the road. The gate was a sturdy metal-reinforced chain link, painted white. Cameras were perched on each side, their casings weather-dulled.
"He's having a party," Gabriel said, with facetious humour disguising the tingle of nerves Greg knew would be there.
"How nice. A big one?"
"For him. It's enough to provide us with cover, anyway."
Greg parked the duo beyond the last of the guests' cars.
"Front or back?"
"Front, of course. Your card is good for it."
He felt a burn of anticipation warming his skin, heightening senses. Black liver flesh of the gland throbbing enthusiastically. They strolled back to the gate, unhurried, unconcerned. Greg showed his Event Horizon card to the post, using his little finger for activation. The gate's electric bolt thudded, and the servos swung it back. It remained open behind them, its control circuitry bleached clean. He sent a mental note of thanks to Royan. The mossy gravel drive crunched under their feet. O'Donnell's house was a large one, 3 stories of dull russet brick with inset stone windows. The slates on the mansard roof a peculiar olive green. Nobody had bothered with the front garden for years. The grass was tangled and overgrown, and dead cherry trees were still standing. Some sort of stone ornament, a bird bath or a sundial, poked up through a tumble of cornflowers. A brand new scarlet BMW convertible was parked in front of the triple garage.
The man that answers the door is a minder. He'll make trouble if you let him, Gabriel said. Take him out straight away.
Right.
He rang the bell. Music and laughter wafted over the roof. Greg saw him coming through the smoked glass pane set into the grimy hardwood door, an obscure blotch of brown motion swelling to cloud the whole rectangle. The door was pulled open.
Hello. Sorry we're late.
The man behind the door was street muscle in a suit. Early 20s, tall, stringy, dark hair, broad forehead crinkling into a frown. Greg stepped forward neatly, one foot on the mat, the other coming up further and further, fast. It was a victory through surprise. A smiling man and a portly spinster eager to party just didn't register as a threat. Not until the carbon mesh reinforced toe of Greg's desert boot smashed into his kneecap. His mouth opened to suck in air, eyes wide with shock. He was toppling forwards, leg giving way, and bending to clutch desperately at his shattered knee. Greg brought his fist straight up, catching the minder's chin as he was on his way down. The force of the blow snapped his head back, lifting him off his feet. Back arching, arms and legs flung wide. He crashed back onto the shiny blue ceramic tiling, skull making a nasty cracking sound, a thin stream of pea-green vomit sloshing from his slack mouth. Greg took in the dark hall behind him with a quick glance, esper sense wide for alarmed minds. Big, tasteless urns holding willowy arrangements of dried pampas grass, making the most impression. But the hall was empty. Nobody had witnessed their arrival.
Jesus, Greg!
Gabriel was kneeling beside the prone minder, feeling for a pulse. Greg opened the cloakroom door.
In here.
There was a wicker dog basket on the floor. Jackets were piled high on a wash basin. It smelt of urine and detergent.
Come on!
Gabriel shot him a filthy look, but took hold of the minder's left arm as Greg grabbed the right. They pulled him across the tiles.
If he was going to die, you'd have told me not to hit so hard.
You know bloody well it doesn't work like that, Gabriel said. There are a million ways you could have dealt with him.
Well, is he going to be all right or not?
I don't bloody know. Some futures have him dying. Greg shoved the dog basket out of the way and left the minder with his head propped up against the toilet bowl. Gabriel rolled up one of the jackets and slipped it behind the minder's head. He was still breathing.
How many futures?
Greg asked.
Some.
Greg recognized the defensive tone and relaxed. The minder would survive.
There's a rear belt holster, Gabriel said reluctantly.
Greg knelt down and felt underneath the minder. Sure enough, he was carrying a mule kick, a flattened ellipsoid in grey plastic, small enough to fit snugly into Greg's palm, with a single sensitive circle positioned for the thumb, and a metal tip that discharged an electric shock strong enough to stun a victim senseless.
We'll need it later, Gabriel said cryptically.
Greg dropped it into his jacket pocket and followed her back out into the hall. The house would have given any halfway competent interior designer nightmares. To Greg, it looked as though it had been decorated by someone watching a home shopping catalogue channel and picking out all the furniture and fittings which had the brightest colours. There was no attempt to blend styles. The lounge had two three-piece suites, one upholstered in overstuffed white leather, the other done in a bold lemon and purple zigzag print. A harlequin array of bioloom spheres hung from the ceiling on long brass chains, imitating a planetarium's solar system display. Dark African shields hung on the wall, along with spears, tomahawks, broadswords, and longbows. The weapons were interspersed with antique rock concert posters, mostly from Leicester's De Montfort Hall, Bowie, Bebop Deluxe, Blue Oyster Cult, David Hunter, The Stranglers, one for The Who at Granby Hall in 1974. If they were real, and they looked it, they must have cost a fortune. The party was in full swing on the other side of the lounge's sliding patio doors. 30 or so people were clustered around the back garden's baby swimming pool. Led Zeppelin was blasting out of tombstone-sized Samsung speakers. A petite blonde girl in a lime-green one-piece swimsuit shoved the patio door open. Robert Plant's fearsome vocals slammed into Greg's eardrums. She came in dripping water all over the deep white pile carpet. She caught a whiff of bittersweet air. Quite a few of the partygoers round the pool were puffing away on fat purple rain reefers.
Hi,
the blonde said when she saw Greg and Gabriel.
We're out of champagne again.
Can I help? Greg asked.
It's all right. I know where it is.
She looked at Gabriel.
You want a suit for the pool?
No, thank you.
We'll get something to drink first, Greg said. Have a wrap with Aid. Is he out there?
Sure, said the blonde. Over there by the grill, in the lube's stupid hat. Hey, can you cook?
Sure.
Try and get him to let you do the steaks, okay? He's half pissed already. We're going to be eating coal if it's left to him.
You got it. How do you want yours?
She pulled long, wet strands of hair from her face, uncovering a dense constellation of freckles. Hazel eyes sparkled at him.
Juicy,
she purred.
Already done.
She peeked surreptitiously at the people outside.
Catch you later,
she promised. There was a corrupting wiggle in her walk as she headed for the kitchen.
Would you like me to wait? Gabriel inquired, oozing salaciousness. We have to stay in character.
Nice for some. Let's get this over with.
How do you want to play it?
Gabriel stared thoughtfully out at the party.
Sucker him in here first, then arm-twist him into taking us to his gear cache. We'll apply the real pressure there.
Is that here in the house?
Yes, in the basement. Quite a setup. Our 10 times is an ambitious lad.
They went out through the patio door into heat, noise, and a smell of charring meat. None of the guests paid them any attention. They were all concentrating on the pool. Somebody had rigged a pole across the water. 2 naked girls were sitting astride it, facing each other. One was white with sunburnt shoulders. The second was Indian. They were whacking each other with big orange pillows. The crowd roared its approval as the white girl began to slip. She fell in slow motion, abandoning the pillow and gripping frantically at the pole, sliding inexorably towards the horizontal. A flurry of blows from the Indian girl speeding her progress, aided and abetted by wild shouts of encouragement from the side of the pool. At the last minute, she let go of the pole and grabbed the Indian girl. They both shrieked as they hit the water. The white flower bloom of spray closed over them, sending up a plume which soaked some of the spectators. Groans and cheers went up. The girls surfaced, giggling and spluttering. Furious little knots of partygoers formed, passing money back and forth.
Jenna next, someone called. And Kerry! 2-1 on Kerry! Bollocks, evens! I'll take that!
The 2 new girls began to edge towards each other along the pole. Aid O'Donnell stood on the cracked ochre flagstones at the shallow end of the pool, white chef's hat drooping miserably, a wooden spatula in his hand. According to Royan's data squirt, he was 24, but his sandy hair was already in retreat. Both cheeks were sinking, becoming gaunt. His skin was pasty white, reddening from too much sun. He wore an oversized azure cotton shirt, speckled by sooty oil spots from the barbecue, and his loud fruit-patterned Bermuda shorts told Greg who had chosen the house's furniture. O'Donnell grinned gormlessly round the faces of his friends as the girls poised ready. Then his eyes met Greg's and froze. The wooden spatula slashed downwards.
Go!
O'Donnell shouted. The girls began pummeling at each other, the blows from their saturated pillows sending out clouds of sparkling droplets. Partygoers began cheering again. The blonde in the lemon swimming suit was walking round the pool filling glasses, a magnum clasped in each hand. The Indian girl clambered out of the pool, cinnamon skin glistening, and shook her long black dreadlocks. She pressed up against O'Donnell, her high conical breasts leaving damp imprints on his shirt as she kissed him. He handed her his glass, which she tossed down in 1 smooth gulp. O'Donnell pushed her away and walked round the pool towards Greg and Gabriel. They retreated into the lounge. O'Donnell followed.
Are you with someone?
He asked. His voice was firm, ready to deal sternly with gatecrashers.
We're here to see you, Aid, Greg said. This is a private party, pal. Guests only.
Private party? Big house. Lots of expensive friends. You're coming up in the world 10 times, Gabriel said.
O'Donnell's jaw muscles hardened. He slid the patio door shut, muting the music and catcalls. Greg sensed the cold apprehension rising in his mind. O'Donnell's eyes kept straying to the door leading to the hall.
Sorry, 10 times, Greg said. Your hard case couldn't make it. It's just you and us.
Will you quit with that handle?
O'Donnell hissed edgily.
These people don't know who I am.
Who do they think you are?
Programmer on a commission to Handsworth Logic, he brightened. Hey, I never expected you to show in person, you know. I mean, I don't mind you coming, no way. I just didn't think it was the way you worked. So what is it? You want me to run another burn?
You're sweating 10 times, said Gabriel. This is all new to you, isn't it? The high life, money, girls.
We'd never have guessed, Greg said, looking pointedly round the lounge.
Hey, look, what the fuck is this? O'Donnell demanded. And what have you done to Broome?
Dunno. Didn't stop to check, said Greg. What does it matter? Ace Hot Rod like you can afford plenty more like him.
O'Donnell's apprehension now blossomed into outright worry. A little muscle spasm rippled across his bony shoulders. The pillow fight outside had degenerated into a wrestling match. One girl ripped the bikini top off the other. The spectators whooped approval. O'Donnell licked his lips.
Hey, come on, who are you people?
We're from Event Horizon, said Greg.
O'Donnell's already pale face blanched still further.
Oh, shit.
He took a half step backwards, ready to turn and bolt, then stopped at the sight of the Walther 8-shot in Greg's hand.
You're not used to this, are you, 10 times? Gabriel asked with silky insistence. A solo hot rod. Your combat is all mental. Well, this time the feedback is physical. You want my advice? Play ball. Don't annoy us. There are another 7 who took part in the blitz. We'll just work down the list until we get some cooperation.
I didn't have any choice.
Tell us about it, Greg suggested. Downstairs.
Down? Where?
Your terminals, Gabriel said. Shit, how...
O'Donnell clamped his mouth shut as Greg flicked the Walther's nozzle towards the door. Out in the hall, O'Donnell stopped and sniffed the air. Then his eyes found the smear of viscous liquid on the tiles. A small pulse of anger coloured his thoughts.
"Through here,"
he said, pointing dully at a recessed door.
"You open it," Gabriel ordered. "Seeing as how it's keyed to your palm print, I'd hate my colleague to receive that 1,000-volt charge."
O'Donnell swallowed hard, almost a gulp. As he turned to the door, Greg slapped the back of his head, knocking his face against the flaking varnish. The cook's hat fell off.
"Shit!"
There was real fear in O'Donnell's voice and mind. He looked at them to plead, a bead of blood seeping out of his left nostril.
I wasn't gonna. Honest. Shit. I wouldn't have. Shit, you've gotta believe me.
Sure, Gabriel crooned.
Behind the hall door were 15 steps leading down to another door made of bronze-coloured metal. It slid open at O'Donnell's voice command.
Impressive, Gabriel murmured.
The basement had been built as a wine cellar. The scars where the racks had been ripped out were still visible on the rough brick walls. A metal air-conditioning duct, which had ensured the bottles were kept at a perfectly maintained temperature, ran along the ceiling. The basement was a hot rod's crypt now, smelling faintly of acetone. There were 5 terminals sitting on a low pine table, all different makes, each hard-wired with customized augmentation modules. Hundreds of Memox crystals were stacked neatly on narrow oak shelving. 4 big cubes clung to the wall facing the table, 2 on either side of a long flat screen which was lit up like a football stadium scoreboard. The gracious services circuit, detailing burns in progress, hackers online, requests, available umpires. Greg searched, and sure enough, saw Wildace's name.
Expensive too, Greg said. According to the circuit, you've only been solo for 6 months. Means you've been scoring pretty good 10 times. How do you do it?
What are you going to do to me?
Greg shoved the mule kick against the matte black surface of the Hitachi terminal on the table. There was a flat crack as the power tubes discharged. 1 zillion precious delicate junctions were smelted into worthless cinders. The smell of scorched plastic filled the air. O'Donnell yelped as though he'd received the jolt.
Oh, shit fire! Do you know how much that cost me?
He stared aghast at the ruined Hitachi.
Don't know, don't care, Greg said indifferently. Now, where's the money coming from?
They give me targets. Pay good.
They?
They, him, her, shit, I don't know. We've never met.
Got a name? A handle?
Wolf.
How does Wolf get in touch? Through the circuit?
O'Donnell shook his head, eyes blinking rapidly.
No, that's the sting, man. Wolf calls over the phone, direct. God, you've no idea how bad that trip was the first time. I mean, that's the whole point of the circuit, right? It protects us as individuals, no hassle, no danger. You pay your dues and you're covered. It's worked that way for 20 goddamn years. Then Wolf comes along and blows it right out of the water. Why me? I mean, what did I do?
When did Wolf first contact you? Greg asked patiently.
About 10 months ago.
But not through the circuit.
O'Donnell glanced from Greg to Gabriel, face screwing up from anger and, strangely, outrage.
It was in a pub! I was having a drink with some mates and the fucking phone goes behind the bar asking for me by name. Wolf knew who I was, where I was, knew about my burns. That is like the most heavy-duty shit a hot rod can get, you know?
Greg whistled, intrigued in spite of himself. It'd take good organization to spring a net like that. Money and expertise. And for what? A team of tame hot rods. Who would want that? And more to the point, why?
How does Wolf get in touch now?
Call box. I have to check in every 3 weeks. Dial a number, just like you do for gracious services. If there's a burn in the offing, I get run around town for an hour until Wolf's happy I'm not pulling up act-track.
Gabriel was sitting in the black leather high-back chair behind the table, tenting her fingers and staring up at the pewter-coloured duct, lost in thought.
The method of recruiting interests me, she said. This Wolf definitely knew you were an active hacker.
O'Donnell nodded sullenly.
The bastard read out a whole list of my burns.
How complete a list?
Dunno.
He caught the look Greg gave him.
Yeah, all right. I didn't spot any missing.
Going back for how long? She asked.
A couple of years. Ever since I plugged into the circuit.
Have you ever had a criminal record?
What? No.
Don't lie, Greg said.
The guilt had glinted in his mind.
I'm not,
O'Donnell insisted hotly.
No record.
He flushed hard, not looking at Gabriel.
Got pulled once, mind. Pig said she was underage. Shit, I mean no way, not that size. Melon City.
When was this? Gabriel asked keenly.
6-7 years back.
The police, did they search your home?
For sure, tore it apart, bastards. They had to drop the charges after that.
He sniggered at the memory.
My mates went and visited her for me. Straightened her out, but good. She didn't want to talk to no one after that, least of all the pigs.
Were you into gear then?
Yeah, a bit. Nothing serious, though, not then.
And where were you living?
Steve Biko Tower.
Gabriel smiled acute satisfaction.
Your turn,
she said to Greg, as if it was some kind of channel quiz show.
I'd like a list of all the burns you've done for Wolf, he said.
O'Donnell scowled sourly, but began typing on the Mitzi terminal.
Carefully, Gabriel warned. Make sure the code is the right one.
We don't want any mistakes like a call for help or anything equally tiresome. And believe me, I'll know if it isn't the right one. The truth finally dawned.
Shit. You two, you're psychic, right?
Got it in one, Greg said. How else do you think we found you?
O'Donnell's subconscious discharged a heavy, rancorous stream of revulsion and dread, contaminating his conscious thoughts. Greg showed his cyberfax to the Mitzi, and O'Donnell squirted the list of his burns over.
How much do you get paid for a burn? Greg asked.
Depends. Normally around 5 grand.
And for the Event Horizon burn?
That was a real big deal. I got 15 for that.
No messing. So which half were you in on?
I don't follow you, man.
What halves? The attack was twofold, remember? The priority data squirt blitz against the core, and the shutdown instructions beamed up to the Merlin. Which were you in on?
I don't know nothing about no Merlin shutdown. All Wolf told me to do was hack into the Event Horizon datanet and fire off a squirt at some BioWare cruncher core. Man, you have never seen anything like that, Blitz Memox. Custom job.
He lifted a glittering black sphere the size of a tennis ball from the table, multifaceted like an insect eye.
The multiplex compression in this lover is absolute genius. Hell, I can't even retro the bytes. Sure wish I could. I'd love to be able to write my own like this someday.
Did this Wolf tell you what the core was? Greg asked.
Sure, it's some kind of fancy Turing personality responses program they've whizzed up to manage the company.
Have you ever thought of backtracking the money transfers from Wolf? Find out who he is. Hit back, perhaps.
Yeah, big zero.
How come?
I ain't up to that, man.
O'Donnell muttered quietly.
Not up to much, are you, 10 times?
Greg plucked one of the Memox crystals from the shelves, reading the handwritten label.
This is a core code melt virus?
Yeah.
Wolf supplied it, right? How many of them come from Wolf?
Some. About half. I ride my own too, man.
O'Donnell was stuffed with righteous indignation.
I see what you're getting at. I'm no cyborg, man. I've got my own scene outside that asshole. I'd have made solo without Wolf, I would.
Give me your bank account number. The one your Event Horizon burn money was paid into. O'Donnell clutched at his hair with both hands, pulling hard.
Shit, no way, man. I've got everything stashed in there. I only burnt your fucking company once.
Greg jammed the mule kick down on O'Donnell's Akai terminal. Blue-eyed static tapeworms writhed across the heat dump fins, snapping and popping like arid matchwood.
All right, O'Donnell shouted. Jesus!
He looked down hopelessly at the tiny wisp of smoke rising from the back of the Akai. The restraint of fear was wearing thin. Anger was predominating again. Greg knew he'd have to do something about that. Soon. O'Donnell's fingers trembled softly as he squirted the information from the Mitzi to Greg's cyberfax.
Hey, listen, you ain't gonna, like, do anything to me, are you? I cooperated, man. Really, I did. You know it all now. God's honest truth, every last bite.
That's right, Greg said, and straight-armed O'Donnell with the mule kick, punching the electrode deep into his small, flaccid beer gut. O'Donnell's cheeks inflated, eyes bulging. Alcohol-toxic breath rushed out of him, and he curled up, collapsing backwards onto the terminals. Memox crystals went glissading over the cold brick floor.
Did you enjoy that? Gabriel asked.
No. Come on. Time for us to make our exit.
Greg sneaked a peek through the lounge door on the way out. The pool was filling up. People fully clothed, people half-clothed, naked people. Empty magnums and sodden burger baps were bobbing about among them. A cloud of thick blue-black smoke was mushrooming up from the barbecue grill. The steaks and sausages were burning fiercely. Led Zepp was crashing out, whole lot of love. Hell of a party. Greg tugged the duo away from the curb in a tight U-turn, ignoring the shrill clamor of incensed bicycle bells, and headed back towards Oakham. Gabriel hunched down in the passenger seat and devoured the information O'Donnell had squirted into his cybofax.
Make any sense to you? Greg asked.
Nothing obvious leaps out. The targets are companies and finance houses. Most of the time, Wolf wanted logic bombs crashed into their data cores. Though there are some data snatches, too, mainly high-tech research.
Doesn't tell us much. I'll squirt it over to Morgan Walshaw, get his economic intelligence team to run an analysis on it, see who benefits most.
But you've got a pretty good guess. I know you. You're almost happy about finding this list.
Yeah. What odds will you give me that our friend, Kendrick DiGirolamo, comes up top of the beneficiaries?
You really have got it in for him, haven't you?
Yep. Logic and instinct, both. All I need is proof, and darling Julia's avenging angel would take it from there.
I'm not so sure, Gabriel said. That entrapment gig this Wolf character snared O'Donnell with, it's very long-term.
Find a gear-crazy kid who's growing up in exactly the right sort of environment that'll turn him into hot-rodding, then tap his phone for 7 years just to get the evidence to nail him with? Why? I mean, what's he doing for Wolf that he wouldn't have done ordinarily on the Gracious Services circuit?
Let's see. How many burns are on that list?
32.
Including the one against Event Horizon. Greg slowed the duo and turned onto the B6047, heading for Tilton. It was a terrible road, so overgrown in places that the tarmac had vanished under grass and thistles. He steered into the ruts left by the farm wagons to get some decent traction, hoping nothing was coming the other way.
32 is one hell of a lot of burns for a 10-month period, he said. And Wolf has a team of at least 8 hackers running these burns for him. Gracious Services is normally pretty independent, but even their umpires might begin to wonder what was going down. They're smart. If there is a pattern to the burns, they'd spot it. Wolf isn't the type to leave his flank exposed like that.
Hence the need for privacy. Yes, I can buy that. Well, we'll just have to see what Walshaw's people come up with. By the way, what did you want O'Donnell's account number for?
Wolf chose O'Donnell because he isn't a true hot rod, not yet. He's a greenhouse product, force-grown, given viruses on a plate instead of developing his own talent to write them. That way he can't stray from Wolf's carefully ordained path. O'Donnell doesn't have the ability to backtrack the credit transfers, but Royan sure as hell does.
That still doesn't explain away the police complicity in O'Donnell's entrapment.
Kendrick has more than enough money to bribe a squad or two of underpaid bobbies.
Gabriel groaned in dismay.
Christ,
and Eleanor thinks I'm neurotic.